钱。
Next, we are going to have a special musical number by Sally Wilson, and then following that, we are going to be receiving teachings. Sorry, I don't know how to put that in English, but we're going to have Brother Justin Garner speak to us, and I'm just going to do a short introduction for Brother Garner right now. He came here as a student, and he graduated in 2000. He has been here for about 8 years, and he's married to Elisa. He has 4 kids, 2 girls and 2 boys. The oldest is 9, and the youngest is 18 months. And he is the physical activities director here at BYU-Idaho. So we're going to hear from him. And then directly following that, we're going to have the closing hymn on page 135, and then a benediction by Clark Wyatt.
Oh,
morning, brothers and sisters. It's good to be with you this morning. As we look out over the audience, we've decided that the donuts must be on this side of the room this morning. It's interesting in the church. It seems like we teach gospel principles and they often repeat themselves every year or every 2 years. But when we have a speaker, we always expect something new and marvelous to come from them. The things that I speak about today may not be new to you, but that's not really what's important. What is important is that we invite the Spirit to be here to teach you. Some of you have brought paper and things to take notes with. It's important to know that the things that I say today may not be or are not as important as the thoughts and impressions that come into your mind. As you get those impressions throughout the day, I would invite you to write those things down, not so much the things that I might say. Elder Scott taught us that as we write those impressions down, we are showing gratitude to the Lord for the inspiration He has provided us. And writing those down, we'll be blessed with more. So that's an important thing. About 8 months ago, President Clark created a framework that pulls together the key dimensions of the foundations of BYU-Idaho. That framework was a series of circles that many of you have seen. It was the topic at his Thursday devotion or forum a few weeks ago. At the center of this diagram is the core around which everything else is based at BYU-Idaho. That core is student honor. Now, I'm not going to talk about the honor code. I'm not going to be talking about all of the details of student honor. That might be a part of what student honor is. What I'm talking about today is who you really are. What makes up you? I've been involved with sports most of my life. I played high school sports. I went on to compete 4 years while at college. I've been involved in athletic administrations at four-year universities. I then came back to Benricks College to coach in 2000. I then spent the first 3 years in the activities program in competitive sports, where I was able to help start up several sports and worked with many athletes. Not so much many of you anymore. I think most of those have now gone. But a few of you I do recognize. I've also been in the halls of the Hart Building during and after games, both competitive and rec sports. Many of you don't know who I am, and so therefore you don't know what you've said around me. And that's kind of really what I want to talk about today, is some of the things that I've heard, some of the behaviors towards officials, players, coaches, and others, your own colleagues. Recently I was reviewing some news articles, and I wanted to bring up a few of them. I noted a few of them down because it really sets a trend and maybe a reason for my concern. You'll have to bear with me. There's a few of them here. But a coach still remembers a little girl standing on the mound trying to play softball. She was pitching out there, and all of a sudden she broke down crying. The volunteer president of the athletic association recalls the coach went out to talk to her, and she said, "My dad is embarrassing me to death." The girl was 9 years old. At a fast pitch softball game for 12-year-old girls, the parental units from both teams get in a bleacher clearing brawl that requires 4 squad cars, 8 uniformed officers, the community fire and rescue squads, and 2 detectives to restore order. Again, they were 12 years old. A hockey parent objects to the very poor officiating of his son's hockey game. After the game, as both teams are coming off the ice, the parent in question runs through both teams and cold cocks the official. The sister of a coach files a lawsuit against the coach for ruining her son's career and dreams. Why? coach couldn't give her son, or the coach didn't give her son the appropriate playing time. She filed a suit. The coach later threw out the suit as frivolous, but the harm was already done. You see, the coach was her brother and the son's uncle. A man elbows his wife in the face, knocking her down while yelling at her to be quiet and don't tell him what to do. His son had cracked a player on the opposing team over the head with his hockey stick, breaking his helmet, and received no penalty. The next period, the kid that got cracked set out to even things up. In a pileup on the sidewalk, he started punching the other player repeatedly. The official returned the favor and made no call. To which Mr. Elbows went crazy when his wife asked him to sit down and be quiet. Brothers and sisters, these are pretty bad. You might be saying, why on earth would you be talking about those at a Morningside? We're all members of the church. We wouldn't do anything like that. We hope not. But there are some, maybe not as serious, that have happened on this campus. On one of the teams that I had, we had a team member who didn't like their coach, who started talking to their friends and other teammates until eventually most, if not all of the team, didn't like coach. Which caused this coach to come into my office 1 week before the championship to resign her position. An official recently refereed a local game. The crowd was quite rowdy. When the officiators of the event asked the official how he could deal with such a hostile crowd, his reply, "Oh, it's nothing. I ref the BYU-Idaho games." Do you see the cause for my concern? I'm sure that many of you have heard stories similar to these or had experiences like these. If not, need I bring up church basketball? Or the Pinewood Derby? Brothers and sisters, those things are real. The things that are happening in the world are not good. Like I said, some of these are obviously worse than others, and they're all things that we're trying to avoid. But they all stem from a similar type of behavior. My guess is it's a blatant lack of control. People cannot control their emotions, and they let their emotions run them, not them running their emotions. My guess is that this type of behavior has come from a lack of understanding, a lack of desire to understand, and a lack of really caring what their children or others might think of them as an individual, and or what that influence might have on others. I hope, brothers and sisters, that these types of behaviors are things that I never read about from a BYU-Idaho student. In many of the graduation addresses that have been recently given, starting with President Bednar and now President Clark, graduates are told as they leave that they now represent BYU-Idaho. You represent BYU-Idaho, no matter where you go. No matter what the setting is, you are a representative of BYU-Idaho by being a student here. My fear is that by bringing up some of these things today that you might think that I don't think sports are good. And let me assure you that that's quite the opposite of what I really think. I don't think that sports create bad behavior. In fact, I think that it creates good behavior. I believe that sports teaches many great things to those who choose to participate. In fact, I believe that sports prepare individuals for life. If I didn't believe that, I wouldn't have been involved in sports for all these years. Life is definitely uncertain. As you participate, you'll probably recognize the fact, or have already recognized, that a game plan never goes as planned. It teaches, sports teaches students to be, or individuals to be disciplined and have balance in their lives. Jack Nicklaus probably summed it up best when he said the following: I think kids who miss the opportunity to participate in organized sports miss the opportunity of learning what life is all about. That's learning how to get along with others, learning how to win, learning how to lose, learning how to take winning gracefully and defeat gracefully, learning how to find that there are people who will perform better than you do, and finding out that you can perform better than others, and learning how much hard work will get you. Wanting to win is not bad. In fact, it's a very good trait, to want to succeed at anything you do. It's how you channel the spirit of competition that is important. Competition should bring out your best efforts, and winning should not come at all costs, and your emotions should never get the best of you. The highest level of any athletics experience or any athlete's experience is the Olympics. In order to qualify for competition, athletes must attain a minimum level of achievement or a certain standard. They understand that breaking a rule or penalty often results in a disqualification. It therefore makes sense that they would have one of two behaviors if they don't understand the rules completely. One, they would simply follow out of blind ignorance. They would just follow the rules. Or two, they would seek clarification so they didn't violate the rule and suffered consequences. Life is really no different. If rules are broken, there are consequences. If you speed, you get a speeding ticket. If you break spiritual laws, you can be disqualified from certain blessings, such as serving a mission. See, brothers and sisters, there's a consequence for everything we do. Here at BYU-Idaho, we run a sports program that is quite unique in the world's eyes. We have rules based on principles that are in place to help mold and shape individuals' behavior. We've been taught that we're a disciple preparation center, and as such, we must seek to follow Jesus, to learn from him and of him, and live according to his teachings. If we look in 3 Nephi, chapter 27, verse 27, it tells us, "What manner of men ought ye to be, even as I am?" Brothers and sisters, I'm not perfect. None of us are perfect. But we know what we're supposed to strive to be like. On our personal path of discipleship, we have been asked to raise the bar. President Hinckley has often encouraged us to do this for many years by simply telling us to do our best, that we can do better than we are currently doing. President Clark taught that on that path of discipleship, it's a journey of steps, not leaps and bounds. We must raise our personal bar a notch at a time. Now, some of you know that I was a decathlete through my college years. As a decathlete, one of the events that I participated in was the high jump. So literally, I saw an obstacle that increased a notch at a time. I had a goal to jump 7 feet. Now, I'm not that tall, but that was my goal. At one of our competitions, I was able to clear 6'10" and had my chance to clear a 7-foot barrier. I didn't make it, which was okay. But I often think of those experiences that I had as a decathlete and wonder how my experience may have changed had I left my sights set at 6'4". I would have never made 6'10" or 6'8". You see, every time that I cleared a certain bar or a certain level, I had to reset my goal. It's really no different in our own lives. As we want to change and modify behaviors, we have to set personal goals. In my visits to the Heart and around other locations on campus, I've heard students say, "I can't wait till I leave here so I don't have to deal with this policy," or, "I don't understand why we have this rule. It's so dumb. I've also seen and heard students who are involved in other leagues, and many of you are part of those leagues. Rexburg Bulldogs, Dragon Soccer, Madison Lions. You may have even put a team together and gone out to the Ryrie City League basketball games. Whatever the situation, that's fine. I'm not trying to convince you that those are bad. They're not. But when I hear things say, I can't wait for the weekend game at wherever, I won't have to put up with this rule. It's a cause for concern. Remember, all of you are BYU Idaho students, and certain behaviors are expected when you're on campus and when you're off campus. I often wonder if students really understand why the rules are in place and why certain policies are in place and what we hope to accomplish by enforcing them. At times, I've received calls from other institutions or reports from individuals who have played against some of you. I've had some very good conversations when I've had people tell me that I know they don't represent your school, but you would be very proud to know how they handled themselves while they were here. I like to hear those. And we do have those. But occasionally I hear just the opposite. Here's one such report. We played against a team from your college. Now they don't know how we're organized and we don't travel, but they know it was a bunch of BYU Idaho students. They were giving us cheap shots all night. I've also heard of the language used at some of these contests. And brothers and sisters, it's not language that we would use or allow on this campus. So why would we use it elsewhere? Which leads me to the question, who are you really? Back to the center circle, student honor. We're not going to police who you are. You're going to police who you are. We're not going to force you to do anything. We might hold you to a certain standard. Those are the consequences that we've talked about already. In a 1998 devotional, Elder Bednar taught this. He said, and I quote, "Home is the only place where you cannot hide who you really are. You learn the truth about yourself in the home, and you cannot hide from the truths that you do not want to see and that you do not want to be reminded of. Sometimes that can be very painful. Sometimes we do not deal with that reality very well. But in the home, we cannot hide from it." He continues, "Knowing that I cannot hide from who I really am when I am with my wife and my children, or in your case, roommates or families, it produces in me a desire to be better than I would ordinarily be." Brothers and sisters, think about that comment for a minute. We can't hide who we really are. You see, student honor, who you really are, is how you act and how you behave when nobody's looking. It's hard to hide who you really are from a brother and sister, because you might be able to hide it for an hour while on campus at a basketball game or a hockey game or a swimming competition. But when you go home, you let your guard down, and you usually show who you really are. If you use bad language at home, you'll probably use bad language here. If you act a certain way at home and you try to change those behaviors, and you're surrounded with good people, then you will probably be apt to do the same here. Once you know who you really are and have identified your weaknesses, then you can start a change. We don't have to do it alone. Our Father in Heaven has provided us with a wonderful support team. We have access to our parents, to bishops, to quorum presidents. We have access to team members. We have access to our coaches and to our advisors. We're all in it together, brothers and sisters. We're all doing this together. If you'll turn to your Bible dictionary under the word grace, I'd like to point out a teaching. It's on page 697 in your Bible dictionary. About halfway through this, it says this. Well, let's start up here. Grace, a word that occurs frequently in the New Testament, especially in the writings of Paul. The main idea of the word is divine means or help or strength given through the boundless mercy and love of Jesus Christ. Skipping down. We receive strength and assistance to do good works that they otherwise would not be able to maintain if left to their own means. This grace is an enabling power that allows men and women to lay hold on eternal life and exaltation after they have expended their own best efforts. See, we're not doing this alone. We just have to do our very best. We just have to try. And when we do our very best, then we're taught that the enabling power of the atonement will kick in and make up the rest. He will help us through those times of difficulty. In Doctrine and Covenants 123, it talks about this a little further. In section 123, verse 17, therefore, dearly beloved brethren, let us cheerfully do all things that lie in our power, and then may we stand still with the utmost assurance to see the salvation of God and for his arm to be revealed. See, after we do what we can do, then he'll make up the rest. There may be a few of you, I don't think a lot of you, there may be a few of you who think you're fooling us, like making us believe that you're somebody you're not. But that's okay, because you're not fooling us. Again, remember, you have to make the first change. Why is all this important? Why would we be talking about all this morning? See, you'll have children one day. You'll be the soccer moms and the hockey dads. They, your kids, will follow your example. They will model your behavior. Notice that in the example I used earlier about the hockey player hitting somebody over the head with a stick, it was his dad who had also got himself into trouble. He's modeling his parents' behavior. In my office, for quite some time, has been a little saying that I clipped out of the paper, and it says, "Be sure the person you are today is what you would want."
We don't. We expect you to help us make it perfect. If you don't understand the rule, we don't want you to murmur. We don't want you to not understand. We want you to understand. We want you to seek understanding. Let's turn to 3 Nephi, chapter 17. See, all the answers, brothers and sisters, are in the scriptures. The Lord doesn't want us to not understand either, so he's given us the formula how we can find out things that we don't understand. Chapter 17, verse 2 and 3. It says this: I perceive that you are weak and that you cannot understand all the words that I have commanded of my Father to speak unto you. Therefore, go ye to your homes. Remember what we talked about? At homes. Can't hide who you really are, so go home. Ponder upon the things which I have said. Ask the Father in my name, that you may understand. And prepare your minds for the morning, that I shall come to you. Go to our homes. Ponder. Instruction line upon line, precept upon precept. Accomplishments in the sports world are really not any different. We'll rarely see the result or a major accomplishment as a result of a short period of time. Usually it's an accomplishment that's achieved over many years or like several months of preparation. And it takes a lot of hard work. But it must start sometime. Our hope is that it starts now. And it stays with you throughout your life. President Benson gave this statement. The Lord works from the inside out. The world works from the outside in. The world would mold men by changing their environment. Christ changes men, who then change their environment. The world would shape human behavior, but Christ can change human nature. I want to tell you a couple stories, some of the things that I've seen since I've been here in college. One is about two athletes I had back when it was in college. These were both great young men and individuals that I admire greatly. I was their coach. It was soon after they arrived that I realized that both of them had tattoos. Back then, it hadn't been announced that we shouldn't be. But one of them had a tattoo right across the small of his back, across the whole of his back. And the other one had a tattoo that went across his shoulders. During that year, President Hinckley made an announcement that when you should have one area, you shouldn't have tattoos. Now, because of that, and because of what we represented at the time, with Rick Sowers, we had asked those individuals to keep a t-shirt covering those tattoos. It's not so much the issue that they had a tattoo, but what I want to focus on is the behavior that happened after that incident. You see, one individual never did understand why we had asked him to have one of those tattoos. And often complained about having an incident. Why did he have to wear a t-shirt under a tank top in Texas? While the other young man had spent 4 months every 2 weeks driving to Utah at Israel. You see, he didn't understand, but he knew that the prophet had asked him to make a change in his behavior. He reported that it was often more painful for each treatment to take it off than it was to put it on. The other story I want to talk about is a young man that was part of the activities program. This young man came from the Tri-City area. He didn't know any different when he came here, how it happened. His language wasn't, by his own admission, his language wasn't what it should have been. He didn't think the official ever made a right call. He had a lot of things that he didn't like. The thought was really my program was just odd. And why did we ask him to do such a thing? This young man started to understand. He sought understanding. He asked. He prayed. He pondered. This young man changed his life. He came back just before he left and told us of the experience and change that it made in his life. That he could never go back to being the person that he was being king. See, brothers and sisters, he understood. And we're not saying he has never all understood. This isn't something that most of you do. But it's the type of behaviors that we're dealing with. Who are you when nobody's watching? How do you act when nobody's around? Are you finding ways to apply the lessons learned in sports? Other areas of your life? Are the things that you're learning as a coach or simple team helping you be a better elder spawn or really society president or visiting or teacher? See, everything has a spiritual meaning. Sports is a gift. Probably some of you have already recognized that. But the things we do here can be spiritual through sports setting. What you become here will stay with you the rest of your life. I urge you to seek understanding so that growth can occur. The rules that we have in place are not meant to bind or restrict you, but rather to act as safety restraints. We like the seatbelts in your car. You don't have to wear them, but they may save you something. As you follow and obey them, your personal performance will steadily improve. Brothers and sisters, I testify that Jesus is the Christ. He knows each one of us personally and of our needs. I know that He lives, as does His Father. We love Him.